the I thought maybe our children would be interested in the house that Grandpa and Grandma Macumber lived in. Grandma had three children, three boys, before she had a home of her own. They had lived in the original log cabin, and she had taken care of Grandpa's parents and had three children in this, I suppose, one-room log cabin. So she had a home of her own. I've wondered if maybe they started out with two rooms, but it consisted of a large kitchen, and in the kitchen there were an iron cook stove, an old-fashioned one, with wood, and a wood box by the stove, and then there was a west window, and by the west window was a rocking chair. I think they called them sewing rockers. And that was always there, and we were always welcome to sit in it if we wanted to.
Now, is this when Grandma and Grandpa got their own house?
Yes.
Grandpa Macumber.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And they, there was a door to the north, and a long porch that ran the full length of the house, and there was a porch on the back. In the east corner, there was a washstand and a roller towel.
Now, this was out in the back porch?
No, still in the kitchen.
Oh, in the kitchen, okay.
And I remember Mother Paul didn't like to wash. And he was quite a strong little boy, and I can remember Mother scrubbing him. And I think she used, like, lava soap, and she scrubbed behind his ears. And then you went to the east, and there was a pantry. And I hadn't thought about it before, but when I was trying to picture it, they didn't have hardly any cupboard. I don't know how Grandma kept things straight in her and everything.
There was no cupboard in the kitchen, was there?
No cupboard in the kitchen. Just had that big oak table in the rocking chair. And the stairwell was in the pantry, and she used to have a kerosene stove in the summer that she used, and the water pail was there, and the ladle to ladle the water. And then there was the living room with the horsehair sofa and Grandpa's Victrola and his chair. Grandpa had a special chair. And a library table, and they had an Aladdin lamp on that table, and it really gave a very bright light.
What is an Aladdin lamp?
It has
It has mantles that you light. It's kerosene. You pump it up, and it's a pressurized kerosene, or like the Aladdin lanterns, that the camping lanterns, you know, that have the mantles. Oh. It's similar to that.
And Grandpa had some records. I guess we said that once before about his records. But he was the one who played the Victrola. I can't ever remember Grandma doing it.
Now, talking about Grandpa, let's talk about him playing the fiddle.
Okay. Grandfather had a violin, and he could play. And he played for dances when he was young. And after he accepted Christ, he no longer would play for the dances. And the fiddle was supposed to be in the attic. And I thought it would be neat to find that fiddle. But when we looked, after everything was kind of settled down and they were looking and to sell it and everything, there was no fiddle in the attic. So whether Aunt Wilma got in there and sold it, I don't know, because she thought the world owed her a living, I guess. Because I remember one time, after her husband died, she wanted to go to the World's Fair, and some friends of theirs had invited her to go along, and the man she eventually married again. And she got very, very upset with Grandma, because Grandma didn't want to have four more children to care for on top of me and Carol and Paul. Carol and Paul were a little older.
Carol and Paul weren't there then.
Weren't there, no.
No, Carol and Paul were not there. It was you and me, and it was just after the summer after Grandpa died, and she wanted money from Grandma, and Grandma told her that the estate had not been settled yet. She couldn't give her money. She didn't have it to give her, and it made her very, very angry because Grandma didn't give her the money.
Anyhow, she went off and left the kids there. Of course, then Grandma had to take care of them. And I thought that was pretty selfish to, you know, put those four children on her when Grandma didn't really want to.
Matter of probably 2 weeks after Grandpa had died, and Grandma wasn't in the mood, he wasn't mentally able to take on anymore.
And was our mother there then?
No, Audrey and I were staying with her for a while.
Oh, we were visiting.
Visiting with her. Uh-huh. But then she knew we'd take care of ourselves. Mm-hmm. But Laura was, and Reva and Merle were younger yet than I am, mm-hmm. or than I was, so, you know, she had the responsibility of them.
Also, I remember one time
we... Let's just mention here, we were talking in the car about the difference in the children of that same family, which we all know to be true in our own families, but Mother was kind and kind of, well, I would say kind of quiet-spirited. Would you say that?
Mm-hmm.
But Aunt Wilmy was very selfish and
grabbing, very grasping.
And yet now Uncle Henry, that she married as her second husband, I always thought he was wonderful.
Yeah.
And I don't know how he put up with all that. Okay, Audrey, go ahead.
I'll see what was my thought. One time I was visiting Grandma, and she had a bunch of little chickens, young chickens, maybe you could say half grown. And the storm was really, really terrible. And afterwards, after the storm had passed, these chickens were all laying in the yard and looked like they were dead. And Grandma went out and she said, had me help her. And we picked them up. She built a fire in the oven, in the stove, and stuck those chickens in the oven. They all revived. So she, you know, she'd use her egg money to buy. There was a bus that year. Store that used to come by, and she'd sell her eggs and get a few things, whatever, because she didn't get to go to town very often.
And so this grocery wagon would come by the farm
and stop, and Grandma would trade her eggs, and they carried lunch meat and bananas and.
Do you remember that grocery truck that came to Grandma's?
Mm-mm.
We'd go on there and buy candy.
Yeah,
is that
like
right?
A bus.
It was like a bus.
Uh-huh. But it had shelves. Just like a grocery store, had all kinds of shelves and had some kind of refrigeration.
Mm-hmm.
And
must have been just an ice box.
Yeah, it probably was. And Grandma would, she'd take her eggs about 12 or 15 cents a dozen. And she'd trade off her eggs for whatever she needed.
I think my memory is kind of blotted. I don't think I think something happened to me in my early age.
I remember that.
Do you?
Getting in that bus and buying.
At one time, wasn't there a little grocery store in the people's house across the street?
Yeah. Yes.
I remember that.
Yeah,
across from
there.
Grandma's house.
Yeah, that was a treat, too.
Yeah.
When Grandma was, my mother, Grandma Fuller, Flossie Fuller, was little, gypsies would come through the countryside. And the lady would come to the house and say she needed milk for the baby in the wagon. But the man would go to the barn and see what he could steal. And Grandpa would have to go, if he was in around the house, he'd have to go to the barn and watch because they'd steal him blind. And when Marge was little, it was, I think, Thanksgiving time. Mother was making Jell-O and had a cup. We had a tin cup that we used as a drinking cup, but it was also a measuring cup. And Mother had her boiling water in that, and Margie pulled it off onto her and burnt her arm just terrible. The blister was so bad that it burnt the upper part of her arm, but when she'd hang her arm down, the blister went clear to her wrist. just terrible. And, another time when we lived in this same house, it was kind of an attic house, wasn't real well insulated, and it was awfully hot.
Now, this is our house?
This is our house.
Okay.
And Dad had taken the window out, and they just had mosquito netting over it because it was so hot up there for us. They heard me come downstairs. There was 12 steps. I hit 3 steps going down the stairs and run in the bedroom, and I said, "Daddy, Audrey's fallen out the window." I do. And, of course, Daddy and Mother both bounded up. She was sound asleep in bed.
No wonder I don't remember.
And Daddy says, "Well, honey, you're dreaming." But that was so real. I could see her falling out that window. And it was quite high off the ground, you know. And I could just see her falling out that window.
Okay. What's next?
We finished the house. The living room.
No, this is still Grandma's house.
This is Grandma's house. Now. Yeah. And there was a living room, and that was where Grandpa's... Oh, I guess we did that about the Aladdin lamp, and I forgot where I was.
Yeah,
and there was a bedroom off from it, and then there was an upstairs with 2 rooms. One was quite small, and the windows came right down to the floor up there. So, and Aunt Minerva's bed was in that, and she had a curtain around.
Yeah, we've told about Aunt Minerva.
So, let's see. The stovepipe, did we say that?
Came up through and all that.
In this house that Audrey was just talking about, in Grandma's house, where she said the windows were down real low, Uncle Melvin was 3 or 4 years old. He begged to sleep upstairs with the bigger boys. He was the younger of the 4 boys, and he begged to sleep up there. And he did fall out the window. And they had an ivy vine all over the house, you know, all up the side of the house. And somehow or other, that ivy vine had protected him, and the boys went down and said, "Dad, Melvin's fell out the window." And when Grandpa went out there, he was still sound asleep. It hadn't woke him up, but the ivy vine apparently had broken the fall enough, so he laid there sound asleep. Oh.
Grandpa used to pay us 5 cents, I suppose, for hours of work, to pick up stones and putting them on a stone bolt pulled by a horse. Mm. Well, Grandpa David was... Grandpa's father.
Grandpa Mac's father?
Mac's father.
And he was born on the ocean coming from Scotland. And we have no record of how he met Rebecca. And that
was our grandparents' parents.
Yeah, and Rebecca was
Grandpa's
mother. I get
Grandpa
things Max all mixed
mother.
Up
oh.
good.
Mm-hmm.
Why would he meet her?
Well, we don't know how he met her. That's what she's saying. We don't know how he met her.
Well, if Rebecca was his mother, what
no,
was
Rebecca no. was Grandpa's mother.
It was his
father, David.
David's wife.
Yeah, Rebecca was David's wife.
Okay, let's go on.
She doesn't get it yet.
Audrey, you were going to tell about Daddy taking you shopping. We're kind of skipping around here, but it's because we're trying to
When I was to graduate, Dad took me shopping. I can't remember why Mother didn't go. And he took me to Lerner's shop.
These kids were little.
In the downtown part of Flint. And, I thought that was really wonderful. I was going to get a button dress. And it was pink, a pink one with lace, pink lace sleeves, real full and tight at the wrist and long. And he let me have a yellow, Dad didn't like yellow, but he let me have a yellow dress. So I had a dress for both occasions, the baccalaureate and the graduation. And they were cut kind of so that they flared, and I really thought they were beautiful. But it cost $8,
two
of them, for the two. And I thought, boy, that's spending a lot of money on me. And it was 1935 when I graduated. And I was the first child in the Macumber family to graduate, and probably the Fuller family, to graduate from high school. And I was thrilled that my Uncle Will, my Uncle George, and their wives, and I can't, and Grandma,
came to your graduation.
Came to my graduation. And,
They had, in 1938, they had the National Youth Administration, and the principal of my school let me have the job. At first, or most of the time, I just had the candy, a little candy counter. And before school started and at noontime and after school, I sold candy. And I earned for about 20 hours a week, and I earned the grand sum of $6 a week. And I thought I got $6 a month. And I really thought that was wonderful. I had 20 hours a month and about $6 a month. That was the way it was. And when, like Audrey said, folks didn't have money enough to get me any graduation dresses. And I bought one dress for $1.98. And I bought a pair of shoes for $1. And Grandma Mac gave me the money to buy material, and Mama made me a beautiful dress. And I think I gave Mother the money to buy Marge and Irma material to make their dresses for graduation.
Dad had to go to work when he was only 14, and he had a job in Edmore, Michigan.
Now, he only got to go through the third grade.
Right, third grade,
and
yeah.
He had to start working.
And he, I suppose they didn't go to school like we do now, a whole year.
Yeah, they did.
And
he had to quit. He had to drop out.
Anyhow, these teachers would teach him a night.
Why did they teach? Why were they teaching him?
They were school teachers. Didn't he work for them?
Yes. When I was about 7, the Ku Klux Klan came to St. John's. We didn't even have any, but one colored man, and he was a post mailman, and everybody thought he was a real nice man, so it didn't go over too big. But I remember going to a Klan wedding, and they were all in sheets. And going to meetings with Mother in a hall that was upstairs. And they talked very bad about Jews and Catholics, and really it made you feel like, you know, somebody was looking over your shoulder and going to hurt you. And Dad and I, like I said we would go downtown Saturday mornings, get me out of Mother's hair, and Daddy liked to walk around and talk. Well, about this time, his sister's husband was a bootlegger, and he was very cruel to Roy, who was her son by her first marriage, and not too good to his own kids. So she had written Daddy, and Dad, they kept saying that they would help people. So I remember, yeah, and there was this big man who was the organizer. And Dad met him downtown, and there was a group of men, so I was kind of standing beside Dad and looking up to see these big men. And Dad explained that his brother-in-law was illegally making moonshine and selling it, having the kids deliver it. And he asked if they would help him, help some way to help the mother and his sister and that man. I can remember Dad's face. You know how hurt somebody gets when somebody puts you down? It makes you feel little. Well, this man was very good at it. I don't remember what he said, but I just remember that Daddy's shoulders kind of sunk. And that was the end of the Ku Klux Klan as far as our family was concerned.
And they didn't really understand what it was about.
No, no, I'm sure they didn't, because later
on...
Because
so unlike
yeah.
Daddy.
Yeah.
Later, when we lived in Flint, Dad and Mother got mixed up with the First of America, First for America. And finally... It was kind of a Nazi.
It was Nazi or communist.
And,
is that right?
And I finally told Dad, I said, Dad, I said, you think about it. I said, I don't think the things they're telling you and what we're hearing are things that belong with us. And so Dad said, well, no, I don't, but I don't know what to do about it. I said, I'm writing to them and telling them that we want our names taken off their list, that we no longer want to have their... papers or have anything to do with them. So I did. And we never heard from it. Yeah. Never heard from it.
When I was, I think about 12, maybe 13, I had the grit paper route. That was a little, I suppose you've seen the grit paper, but anyway, Daddy...
They haven't seen the grit paper.
They've never seen a grit paper? Oh, it's a little newspaper-like. It had a...
Around the country there.
Yeah, it had a lot of, has a lot of good...
Grit?
Yeah, that was the name of a grit. And they had a lot of little tidbits and little interesting stories. And
you can't even get that at our house.
No, you can't even, probably out of publications now. But anyway, Dad fixed, we had a little wired hair terrier dog, and Daddy fixed up a harness. And I would hook him up to my sled and put my papers on the sled, and Rusty and I'd go deliver papers. Well, when I'd stop to go deliver a paper, if I took too long, Rusty'd take off and leave me. And I'd have to run and get him. And I got all of 5 cents a paper to deliver those papers.
And that's pretty good, 5 cents a paper.
Yeah, well, yeah, I got that. That wasn't what the paper... No, that was what the paper cost was, 5 cents. And yeah, that's what the paper cost. And I didn't get...
You probably got 2 cents.
I don't think I got that much, but I got maybe more of a penny of... A paper.
I was visiting Aunt Laurie, who was Grandma Matcumber's sister, and she had a rooming house. But by that time, the rooming house had sort of gone by the way, because the railroad was no longer so, had as many employees passing through St. John's. And we had already moved to Flint, and I was visiting her, and she told me, you go down, and I can't remember what all she told me to buy, but she gave me 4 or 5 things. And then she told me that the money I had left, I could buy bananas. And some way I ended up with either the bananas were awful cheap, or I forgot something or something, but I ended up with a lot of money. To me it was I can't remember how much, but anyhow I came back with this great load of bananas. And so then of course the uncles thought that was pretty good to tease. They when I had pneumonia, which we've talked about before, I had to stay at Grandma's after Mother and Dorothy went back to St. John's. And Mama was cleaning house early in the spring, so she didn't want me to come home till she had it done. But I was so homesick. And Uncle Melvin was teasing. He said, no, you're not going tomorrow. And I said, Grandpa, I said, won't you hook up the horse and take me? They finally took me home, but Mom really was, she knew I was coming, I think. But she really had everything tore up. I suppose they'd already let the fires go out or something. But I survived anyhow.
Grandpa Mac, when he'd have a toothache or a tooth that was loose, he'd go out to the barn, take a pair of pliers, and yank the tooth out. And later on when, we'll see, Irma and Marge were, well, I think they were probably teenagers. Well, Marge, you might have been even married. Anyway, we had been down to Pontiac to Aunt Wilmy's for Christmas, and the folks had a, what they called a, I can't remember the name of the stove, but anyway, it had isinglass windows all around it.
Coke stove. I wasn't married yet.
Weren't you? Oh, coke stove. And, of course, the stove had been shut up all day. And we got home around probably 6:30, 7 o'clock at night. And I was married and lived about a block and a half from Mom and Dad. And Daddy came up, and he looked just terrible. And I said, "Daddy, what's wrong?" And he says, I think we've been gassed." And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" And he says, "The stove." Well, I practically had to support him, carry him back down to the house. And we didn't have a phone at the time, but Mother did, so I called our doctor, and she said, "Get him out of the house as quick as you can." She said, "They've got carbon monoxide poisoning." And she said, "Open every window. Open the doors." Well, this was Christmas time. So that's what I did. And then she told me to get him black coffee. And so I made black coffee for him. And you and...
I had played outside.
Uh-huh, yeah. You stayed with the Williamses.
Well, and I had played outside.
Yeah, so you weren't,
bad,
no.
But Audrey was real bad.
Yeah, Audrey was real bad, and Marge.
We went to Dr. Cunningham.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Audrey and
Marge. She brought us a Coke. Do you remember that? She brought a Coke in for us to drink.
And Mom and Dad went up to Arlene Peckham's. Mm-hmm. And, because I didn't have, mm-hmm. I only had the one bedroom. And stoves were hard to get then. And the doctor had, Dr. Cunningham had to write a order, yeah, to the, I can't even think of the name of the, well, it was government, in order to release the stove. Maybe it was after the World War II started. I think it may have been. And when, you know, you had to have pretty good reason to buy a stove then. And she had to write a writ or an order for Daddy to get a new stove. And, of course, they couldn't be in the house until they could get the stove. So I don't remember how many days it was, but it wasn't too long that they were able to get a warm morning stove.
When Grandpa was dying, I didn't see him the week he died. Dorothy and Mother were there, but there was things going on at school, because that was my graduation year, and so I stayed in Flint. And when I went out, and Grandpa was sick, and everybody knew that he didn't have long, he called me into the bedroom, and he said, "Babe, you'll come back when the apples are ripe." See where I am.
Come back and
when the apples are ripe. There was one tree that we dearly loved, all of us kids. It was a harvest apple, and it was a bright orange, yellow apple. And the tree was situated so you could sit between the branches. And I liked to sit there and eat apples and read. And I've always remembered that he mentioned that he would like me to come back.
During apple time, yeah.
In 1932, February of 1932, Uncle Charles, who was Aunt Wilmy's first husband, died. And we were out there for the funeral, and Dad had Mom had taken Grandpa and Grandma to the funeral, and we were on our way home when the tie rod on the car broke, and when that breaks, you've got absolutely no control. And we took right off across the road out into a bean field. And there was a little tree that Daddy said, "I know that tree dodged," because he said, "I had no control." And it happened to be, there'd been a thaw and the bean field was soggy. He said, "I don't know where we'd have ended up if that field hadn't been so muddy and we got mired in the mud." And we had to call some friends, and they came and got us and
pulled us out
and... Go ahead.
The road that went from Grandma's house to the church and to Uncle Will's and to Pompeii was a dirt road, and they told the flats, the Maple River ran through there, and there was flatlands, wetlands all the way through. And in the spring, it would flood so bad that the road and the bridge and everything would be underwater. And they would drive their buggy through the water. I was always afraid of the bridge. I remember one time we were going to walking to church, Grandma and Paul and Carol and Uncle George and me. And when we got to the bridge, I was not going to cross the bridge. And finally, Uncle George had to pick me up and carry me. I just could not see how I could walk over those cracks and see that water below and not panic.
When we lived in St. John's, when I was a baby, they had a beauty contest for babies. And there was a lady in town that she just thought her baby was the most beautiful baby that ever lived. And she was so sure that her baby was going to be the winner. And then I won the beauty prize. And she was so mad at Mama that she wouldn't talk to Mother for months afterwards because I won the beauty prize.
Okay. This is bits and parts. When we lived out near Flushing, Dad, we had chickens. We've mentioned them before, but my dad used to save the potato peelings and cook them up and make hot, kind of a hot mash in the for the chickens in the wintertime. Huh. And now I don't remember this part about the feed sack dresses. That must have been you other kids.
I remember. Sure, Dad would get big bags of feed, and Mom would wash the. They were in pretty print bags, and Mom would wash the bags up, and she'd make the little girls' dresses out of them. Dad got. It was when they used to have the mohair car cover seats, and Daddy would buy big hunks of it that was left over. They're too small, you know, to put in a car seat, but too. It was kind of a brown, a little bit fuzzy stuff. And then there was a brown, ugly-looking fur or flannel that they put underneath it. And Dad would get that. They'd just give it to Daddy for just little bits of nothing. And he'd bring it home. Mom would wash it up. She made you girls, you little girls, panties and jackets. And she made Merle and Lawrence jackets out of it.
She was really able to take a little of nothing and make something.
Yeah, she was very good at that.
Mother was very good at that.
Mother made bread. When I was little, we had a wood stove, and she would put the bread, she'd bake bread all the time. I can't really remember when I was real little that she went ever bought bread at the store. She made molasses cakes and she'd make rolls. And sometimes, especially when we were on the farm, they'd be running out of bread the day she made the bread. So she'd fry dough at noon for Dad. And us girls that all grew up to love it. We called them Dough Rogers.
Dough Rogers. She's the one that called them Joe Rogers.
And so
she called them Joe Rogers.
And anyhow, they were very good with honey or little sugar on them or just plain.
I remember those too.
And
I remember too about Mama baking. When I would come home from school and she would have had the bread baking and these mammoth big, we called them biscuits at that time, but of course they were not biscuits, they were rolls.
Yeah.
And that was the most fun, to come home to that smell and get one of those great big biscuits, as we called them, or big rolls.
So good. The aroma was so good.
Yeah, it was just terrific.
We wore long-legged underwear with Erica with a flap in the back so we could go potty. We had to unbutton them. And they came way down our legs. And we had to pull our socks up over them. Well, we were embarrassed to wear them to school. So when we got halfway to school, we'd stop and we'd roll our socks down and pull our legs of our
underwear
way up high. Well, then when we come home from school...
Didn't you stop under a bridge or something and do that?
We'd have to stop and try and get our underwear folded
down under your socks again.
There was a fold. She made a fold in them when she put the socks on us. And we would try and try to make it so she would know what we did on the way to school.
By the time we rolled them up like this, the bottom of them was all stretched out. And then when we tried to fold them over like this and pull our socks up over them,
oh boy.
Did Mother ever catch up?
Oh yes, she knew what we were doing. Finally, I remember Mother saying one time, well, there just isn't any use putting them on. You're going to roll them up anyway. She said, you don't have to wear them. Oh, that was a wonderful day. When Irma was a baby, she was probably 4 or 5 months old. She was cutting teeth, and she was real cross, uncomfortable. And Mom gave her a bottle, and she had me entertaining her. And I was jiggling the buggy back and forth and playing with her. And pretty soon, the milk in the bottle turned to butter.
Well, we think that we have pretty well covered the McCumber side, which is our mother's side of the family. So now we're going to talk a little bit about Daddy's side, although we don't have nearly as much to tell about our Daddy's side of the family.
Our great-grandma Fuller was an Amish woman. And I don't know if great-grandpa Fuller was not an Amishman, or if he was from a different group of Amish, or if he was just somebody that her parents did not want. But she married him anyway, and they had 13 children. And when the last baby was born, she died in childbirth. Yeah, me too. And great-grandpa went to his mother's people, or his wife's people, I think her name was Edna. He went to her people and asked for help. And they said, well, they didn't have any daughter by that name. They never had a daughter by that name at all. So they would not help him. And Uncle Lewis was about to... This was Grandpa Fuller's brother, his youngest brother. He was about 7 or 8 years old. And he was indentured out to a farmer. And he lived with that man for about 14, till he was about 14 or 15, 16 years old, something like that. And he ran away from this man. This man wasn't kind to him. And he fell in with some school teachers who taught him many things. And he learned enough to be a pilot on the Great Lakes, a Great Lake boat. And sometime in the early 1940s, Daddy got a phone call. And he said, are you William Fuller? Dad said, yes. And he said, well, was your father's name George? Dad said, yes. And he said, well, did your dad have a brother, Pearl? Dad says, yeah. And he went on and named several of the other. And Daddy said, well, yes, he had, you know, people like that. And he said, well, did you ever hear of a Uncle Lewis? And Daddy said, well, yes. He said, he was my father's youngest brother. And he was indentured when he was about 7 or 8 years old. And he said, we never found out what happened to him. We lost track of him.
Now, and by indentured, did that mean that Grandpa's brother was bound?
Yeah, he was.
I mean that his parents sold him to the man?
Apparently.
The father evidently left so that these 13 children were left on their own. I don't know how old our grandpa would have been, but there were triplets and twins, and maybe the triplets. I don't know whether the triplets
were the oldest.
And they took care of
them. They raised the other kids.
Yeah. And why this one child was picked out to be bound out
would have thought it would have been one of the older ones, but maybe this man that took him wanted a young one. I don't know. But anyway, this man said to Dad, I'm your Uncle Lewis. And he had been so embittered because of what happened, what his family did to him, that he changed his name to Joe Lewis. Oh. And his daughter lived out to Clyle, and he went through the phone book, and he found Daddy's name, and that's how he come to... probably when he was with this... I don't know when became a Christian, but he did become a Christian. And then he looked up Daddy's name in the phone book and called Dad, and that's how Daddy got a hold of him.
Our grandma, Fuller, used to tell us when we were little and we disobeyed or we wouldn't eat our lunch about our poor uncle that was killed and put down a well was just a young man, and that we should be good and be grateful that we weren't... And then to wait till we were young women, and here's the man at the door saying, I'm your Uncle Lewis. Huh. And we told him that all the children thought he was dead, that they had tried to get in touch with him, and this farmer would tell them no. And then they mailed letters to him, and he took the letters. And he convinced Uncle Joe that...
The farmer took the letters.
Yeah, Uncle Lewis, that... that nobody loved him. So when he ran away, it was a day that he had was harvesting days, and the neighbors were all there, and he'd worked just as hard as any man in the fields and whatever, in the wagons and stuff. But when it came to eat, the farmer said, "You can't eat with the men." And he thought, he got really bitter. If he was good enough to work beside the men, he was good enough to eat with them. So that's when he packed his little bag, if he had one, and ran away. Mm-hmm. But those ladies must have been quite good teachers, because he was educated enough to be a pilot on the Great Lakes. And whether he kind of worked his way up to that...
I imagine he did.
He was there for a long time. He'd go out and meet the boats and bring them in through the harbors. Uh-huh. And he married and had a family. And then later, the girl that lived was the daughter of the lady that helped him so much. And he got married. Both of them had lost their partners. Uh-huh. And they met and married. Uh-huh. So, but it was really thrilling to meet him. To meet him, he looked exactly like Dad. He was a big-shouldered, big, tall man, and he looked very much like Dad. Mm. And where Dad's brothers were small, Uncle Oscar was
Let's
small.
Let's talk about Dad's brothers now.
Okay. Dad's brothers were Oscar, and he was blue-eyed and blonde. Huh. And Lorenzo, but we called him Rennie. Uh-huh. And he was very dark, very, very dark complected, and black hair and black eyes. I can only remember seeing him once, about the time that Grandpa Fuller died. He showed up. He was a roustabout with a circus. Huh. And then there was...
Now, Uncle Oscar, what about him? Was he around a lot? I remember Uncle Oscar.
Oscar was had this farm up by Wolverine, and in 1929, when Dad lost his job in Flint, we lived with him for a couple, 3 months, and Daddy worked on the farm for our room and board. And it was very snowy up there. Did we tell about them?
Okay, and then besides Wren and...
Nellie was next.
And Nellie was big like
Daddy. Yeah, Nellie was very dark and big like Daddy.
Swarthy, big bone, like a Negro, or like a...
Indian squaw.
Yeah, she walked like an Indian. Hmm.
And then Aunt Ethel, and she was very petite and very blonde. Blue-eyed, and Grandma Fuller had bright blue eyes, and she was about as tall as Dorothy, but when we knew her, she was almost as white as she was tall.
Oh, is that right?
Now, yeah,
see,
she
never
was
knew about, her. Or
she
never
was,
remembered.
No, she was about 5x5. Dad could stand out and wrestle, take his arm out like that. And Aunt Nellie and Grandma could, Aunt Ethel and Grandma could stand under his arm.
Huh. Without touching his arm.
Yeah, they were that short and little. And they, and Grandma's family was named Barber, and her name was Delilah. Yeah, Love. And yeah, the man that her mother married, who was her father, thought that he was, whether he thought his wife was dead or he just left her and thought 7 years meant a divorce. Then later he ran, his wife caught up with him. So that marriage was not legal.
Now, this was somebody married to Grandma Fuller?
Yes. No, well, to great-grandma.
Great-grandma Fuller.
Yeah.
Huh.
Grandpa and Grandma Fuller, I think Dorothy and I only saw them together once.
I saw more than that, because I would go with Dad sometimes when he would be going to Flint for the load of castings. He and Mom would take me, and you'd be wearing school. And I remember the old Arctic Dairy would, when they'd give away little free loaves of bread. And if Dad would stop to Grandma's about maybe once every couple weeks or so, and she would save these little loaves of bread, about 3 inches by inch and a half or something like that, and she would save them and send them home to us kids.
The one time I remember going to visit them and seeing Grandpa and Grandma together was when they lived on a truck farm near Flint, or in Flint, and he had a big garden and he had lots of strawberries, and he had a horse drawn wagon that he loaded with his vegetables, and he went through the different neighborhoods selling his vegetables and his strawberries. That's really the only memory I have of Grandpa Fuller, or of Grandma Fuller being there. But she visited us several times in St. John's.
Now, Grandpa Fuller died then, or ran off?
Well, ran off.
Ran off. And he got a divorce.
We didn't even hear from him for a long time. I don't know why.
They got a divorce. That wasn't common in those days.
No.
Huh.
And
but he wasn't good to her, was he?
Oh,
did he
no.
run off?
He run off. Mean to her. Mean to our dad.
And tell about what he did to our dad.
He would punish him, punish Dad, even if he knew, absolutely knew, it was one of the other kids. He would beat Dad.
And Dorothy, tell about the when I think about the future Daddy could have had, but how he graciously accepted what was handed to him. And, he ended up with four girls, and several of us needed lots of medical care, and I've often thought about how Daddy never really had anything for himself, but was so gracious to give it to us.
Oscar left home. He had an old horse. It probably wasn't worth much. In fact, Grandpa Fuller sold it for $10, and he gave that horse to Dad for Dad to ride in it. And I think that must have hurt Daddy really bad to have his father take the horse and sell it for a mere $10 and not let him have it. He had it just a few days when his father came home. And he always disrupted it. As far as I can see, he was very disruptive when he came home. If Grandma was cooking anything with pork, there was immediate repercussions. And if Dad was playing ball, there was more. And I don't know whether the other boys got big enough to maybe scare him enough so he didn't. But he always picked more on Dad than any of the others. That was why it was so important to us to see this big uncle whose shape of shoulders and body and looks was like Dad.
Oh, this Uncle Pearl.
Uncle Pearl Fuller, who would be Dad's uncle, uh-huh. looked so much like Daddy. Uh-huh. They could have been father and son. They looked so much alike. Okay. Much, much more than Dad and his father.
And then Uncle Joe Lewis looked like
uh-huh,
yeah.
And Uncle Joe...
Uncle Jim.
Uncle Jim Love, who was Grandma Fuller's brother. He was a big man, but Uncle Rand and Uncle Oscar were probably not over 5 foot tall.
Yeah.
And very very slender.
Took after like Aunt
Dad and Aunt Nellie
were
the big ones. And I don't know if he didn't resent Aunt Nellie, but he resented Dad.
Okay. When the breakup really happened between Grandpa and Grandma for good, and Ethel went to live with Jim Love in Ohio.
That would have been her uncle?
Yes, it was Daddy's uncle. They were about the same age, and that's why I hesitated to say, but Grandma and her mother were pregnant at the same time. So he was about the same age as Dad. And, Oscar more than we knew any of the others. I can't remember. We saw Rennie for a little while when Grandpa died, and we lived on his property for a summer. It was a tar paper shack, and I remember Mother trying to fix the walls, and she pulled off some of the paper on the inside of the house, and here was a whole mess of little dead tiny mice with no hair. And
gross.
Mother, it
mother
was,
loved
oh,
that.
Oh yeah, and that house was so overrun with mice.
Rats.
And rats.
Oh, gross.
And,
glad I can't remember that.
It was a farm. He had about 2 acres, but it was 2 acres that was narrow, but went way back. And there was a creek and a swamp at one part, and there was a deep spring well down in the hollow. And he had a root cellar, and he kept carrots and potatoes and stuff in there. And one of my friends from St. John's came to visit me. And her and Dorothy decided that they were going to go down by the well. And I said I didn't want to go. I don't know whether I was pouting or what. But after they went, I decided I wanted to go. But instead of going down in the hollow where they were, I came up around and I was on the top of the dirt cellar. And I went, ooh, and scared them to pieces. Dorothy had
the reason it scared us to pieces is because shortly before that, there'd been a man murdered a little girl out there, and her body had been found in that creek.
Anyhow, Dora had a little pail in her hand that, well, she's described it before because she'd had it from the time we lived in St. John's. And she had that little pail with her, and she ran, and she fell down and squashed her little pail. Grandma Fuller was visiting us, and... And she really lit into me. And I said, well, I didn't think they'd be scared. I thought they'd know it was me, but that didn't matter. And finally, the only time I think I ever rebelled, really rebelled, I said, I'm sick and tired of heaven. Other people bawl me out. I'll wait for my mother. And of course, Mom, she kind of took my heart. She thought maybe it would be nice if she got to say the things.
Yeah, but Dad didn't take your part.
No.
Dad told her that was the mean thing to do.
Well, I felt guilty. I knew it was easy, but I just didn't want wrong, but I didn't want Grandma to tell me. If Mother had said it, I would have took it in good part and apologized, but...
This might be a good time for me to just interject about beating Marge up and feeling so bad. When we were little, young, I was bigger than she was, and I still am, and we used to get in a little scuffle, and I would keep at it till I made her cry, and then I would feel so guilty I could hardly stand it, but I don't think I ever let her know. But, oh, I felt badly, because I had a very tender conscience, still do, and it really hurt my feelings to think that I had beaten her up.
Grandpa, at the end of Grandpa Fuller's life, he was in the hospital in Flint. And we lived in Pontiac, and I don't know how Daddy found out about it, but we went over there. Daddy went several times over there while Grandpa was in the hospital. He had appendicitis, and through neglect of the nurses or the doctor or something, they left a pair of scissors in him, and he got peritonitis. And one of the last few days that he was alive, Dad took Mother and I over there. I don't remember why Audrey didn't go, but I know that Dad took Mother and I over there, and I remember Grandpa apologizing to Dad for the way he had treated him, and he thanked Daddy for bringing me to see him.
When we left St. John's, or just before we left St. John's, I had a bad fall. The porch was covered with, the steps was covered with melted snow, and when it froze, it made lumps. Footprints, like, and when I fell on one of those hard pieces of ice, and it hurt my back real bad. Well, it kept getting, and then we moved to Pontiac because Daddy didn't have any work in St. John's, and he got a job in the Pontiac factory. He loaded car frames, and I'm sure that must have been a very hard, heavy job.
By hand, yeah.
And then the doctors decided that I had spina bifida and wondered how I had ever walked because I had a hole in my back. So they decided to put me in a body cast. And I don't remember. I remember Dad and them going to Grandpa Fuller, but I don't remember who stayed with me, but probably lived about a block or so from Aunt Wilma, so maybe some of them stayed. I would get so tired of the bed that I couldn't hardly stand it to lay there anymore. The cast was very uncomfortable, and Dad would come home from work, and after he'd worked hard, he would pick me up in his arms and walk the floor with me to ease my back.
How old would you have been?
I was about 12, 13.
Wow.
When you were born, I had helped Mom real good. And when she got to feeling better and you were about 2 or 3 months old, I was going to Flushing High School in the 9th grade. And she said, I had a friend named Lucy. And she said, you can go home with Lucy, and then Dad and I will come and get you in the evening. So I went home from school with Lucy. And then when Mother and Dad came, this was an old farmhouse, and the porch was slanted, and it was been raining. And when I came out the door, I gave a half skip, and I slid and hit that step just like I hit the ice. And I went right forward onto my knees, and Dad got out of the car and came over, or maybe he was out of the car because he came to the door. He picked me up under my arms, and when he picked me up, Mom heard the stamp.
In his back?
In my back. And she was in the driveway, so it really snapped. And I never had another time like I'd been having with it, because it had got so part that my, I don't know, it would be nerves or muscles, that my hands would cramp.
She'd,
and my legs would cramp. And I never had another one of those. So it
was. Daddy just jerked a kink in you.
Yeah.
Jerked a kink out.
But later, osteopathic doctors told us that what had happened was a disc went behind.
There were bones, V-shaped bones, took like that in her back. And when they had slipped past like this, when she first fell, when Dad picked her up, they come back like this where they were supposed to be.
Remember the time you was taking care of me and something happened and I ran away and you ran after me and you fell down, but I was afraid to come back because I was afraid you'd catch me.
I want to tell you another thing about Margie while I think about this. Margie and I were supposed to be taken care of. Well, actually, Margie was supposed to be taken care of. I don't know if it was Arlene or Larry. It was Arlene. And Arlene, I was sick. I was really sick. Had a really bad cold, and I was really sick. And so Marge was supposed to be changing Arlene's diaper. And she wanted me to do it. And I said, Marge, I am sick. And so I watched her, and she went and got my mittens to change Arlene's wet pants. And she never was a great one for babysitting, I don't think.
When Marge was about 2 years old, I think it was, I had gotten an infection in my foot. And I got awful smelling medicine that they had to put on it. Terrible smelling medicine. I'll be polite and not tell you what it smelled like, but anyway, while I was so sick with my foot, Margie got the measles. And she was so sick because they wouldn't come out. They just would not come out. You could see them under the skin, but they just wouldn't come out. And finally, Grandma Mac and Uncle George were there. And Grandma said, well, if we had some whiskey, I'd make her a little whiskey sling. And that would make her sweat and bring them out. Of course, this was during Prohibition. Dad said, well, he'd go see if he could find some. Uncle George says, Will don't know where to go find it. He says, I'll get some. Of course, Uncle George knew all the bootleg places. So he got some whiskey, and they made Marge a whiskey sling. Just put some sugar in a teaspoon and put this whiskey on it. And by the morning, she was peppered from the top of her head to the sole of her feet with just brilliant red blotches.
That reminds me of when I had my tonsils and adenoids out. And I guess, did we have them out there at the poor farm because we were poor? You know where I mean, on Flushing Road?
Probably.
I mean, that was kind of the poor farm, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Poor county hospital.
Yeah.
Anyway, I had them out, and I think it was the very next day, broke out in the mumps. And, of course, they said they never would have taken them out had they known that. But I can't remember much about that except that Daddy held me. I was about 6 years old. Daddy held me and rocked me during that time. And that's another one of those special memories that I had of Dad. Well, these are all our memories that our minds can bring up right now. And we just hope that all of you kids and grandkids will enjoy a little bit about the olden days and get a little sense of family and history from whence you came. We've enjoyed doing it, and we sure hope you all enjoy it. On the next generation, Dorothy's son had to have a bypass.